Ladies and gentlemen, we are live! This is the moment you all have been waiting for! It's time for the global sensation, the one, the only, the undisputed heavyweight podcast in the world, the Mass Timber Construction Podcast. And now, here's Paul Kramer, your host.
It's not very often that you meet some amazing individuals, and today on the podcast is no exception as we interview a gentleman who has been involved in the timber industry for many years and has expanded those horizons to also include digital technology platforms. Today we're very, very happy to have Eli Gould from the Quebec Wood Export Bureau, QWEB as they call it, here to speak to us about some amazing plugins for some software that he's got and just a general chit chat around what's actually happening in the global timber industry. So please enjoy my conversation with Eli.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is Paul Kramer from the Mass Timber Construction Podcast with another special guest episode. I have an interesting international guest who has a significant presence on LinkedIn, which is how we found each other, and some amazing integration with technology, which sits existing outside of the domain of North America and Canada. So here to speak to us on a global level is Eli. Eli, would you like to introduce yourself, please, and tell us who you are and what you do?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Paul. It's great bit of work you're doing here. And my name is Eli Gould. I am a architect by training, actually an architect and forestry dual major from an old school in the US, which got me some work permits about 15 years ago across the border into Quebec, Canada, which is a pretty rare work path. And I did get a chance to be around a lot of the fast growing mass timber businesses there and get to know a large group. So it was pretty natural for me 5 years ago to be recruited to be the US representative for QWEB. QWEB is the Quebec Wood Export Bureau. It's a large 125 member trade association of companies who are operating at a scale big enough to export. And I do cover the US, Latin America, Caribbean zone for them, but there are other representatives like me globally because the Quebec wood structure and wood products manufacturers are really known for going globally. So that's why you'll see some of the work we're doing has a little bit more than just the US, Canada zone in its purview.
And QWEB does export. So what species, what sort of products do they go into? I know in Australia that we used to import a lot of Western Red Cedar. That was going up when it was sort of like, you know, $600 a cube. And then I think just post the GFC, it went to like $1,900 a cube or something like that. And we were bringing in big flitches and trimming them down and making siding for buildings. So what is your primary species and what product segments do you normally distribute?
Yeah, those are good questions. I mean, Eastern Canada and the Northeast in general is a super big mix. It's very different of an ecosystem than our Western Canada species. And it's a humid and temperate zone leading right into boreal and subarctic taiga like forests. So QWEB is broken down accordingly. There's a big hardwood component, a lot of hardwood flooring. There's a whole group of that, which is not my group. There's also major primary softwood lumber mills in the mixed species, SPF being spruce, pine, fir. And for us, that means black spruce primarily, although we have some white spruce, many different pines. And then our fir in the east would actually not be Douglas fir, but is a small balsam fir. So SPF is a grade. It's a mixed grade. Our softwood materials are built from that. But the group that I work with in is actually not just the primary mills, but the value add construction systems that go to actual projects. So prefabricators, engineered lumber, people who are making something for a destination, cutting it exactly for that project and sending it are the real, it's the smallest group within QWeb, but just by way of scale, some of our members are 1,000 guys working on 10 million acres of land with 50 engineers. This is our large member, but and sending mass timber to all 50 states or close to it. So everybody from a large Nordic Structures down to a small truss shop can be part of the wood construction group in QWeb. And that makes my life pretty varied and interesting. And when we try and build software for those guys, which we'll talk about, it really shows how hard it is to capture all the varied structural systems out there now.
And I think we first sort of touched base when you were working with H&O and Patrick from Hacon.
Mm-hmm.
It's to do with Nordic Structures providing the building for East 11 East Lenox Street in
East Lenox. Yeah, that's a
Boston,
great building.
Right? I think that's the right address.
It is. You got it. That's right.
And it's an impressive building. And we had Renz on the show about this time last year talking about the project. And that's when your name came to sort of my attention, because you were working with the Nordic Structures team and with Renz and obviously with Hacon. And now that building's topped out and it's beautiful and it's bold and it's amazing. But at the same time, you know, the construction team, I guess, that you've been working with there also had a technology overlay. So tell us a little bit about that initiative that really is the point for why we're talking today.
Yeah, so we were working behind the scenes. We love teams like that one who are young, digitally fluent, smart guys, and we like to help them really succeed in their home markets. They also were willing to listen to a large, experienced design assist role. So they were beta testing an early version of our offsite wood plugin for Revit, which is now available on the Autodesk App Store for free. But it was in working closely with mixed studios like that, with many stakeholders and a lot of shared modeling, and that we really honed our approach to creating helpful content for the industry to make sure that when people are practicing in shared AEC or BIM models, they're often not realizing that the software themselves and the history of that software and its origin is really favoring the steel and concrete systems. It's not anybody's fault. It's just that the wood systems didn't really exist. We didn't coordinate our standards. And the moment that an architect makes choices about actually loading systems is right when we need to be present with the modern means and methods, and we're largely not. So the project that I'm doing now is sort of an infrastructure project, making sure that wood systems are fairly represented within the BIM environment. We chose Revit first because it's just such a juggernaut in North America, but we do want to make clear that we have broader global larger commitments to the BIM environment that Revit does represent for us. And it's been a really good learning path. That project was a really good example. Actually, there were about 5 beta testers on that project, and we saw 4 out of 5 of them all go to full fruition. So we're going to have more projects like theirs to show. But I think it's really an example that BIM is really about collaboration. Teams who can do that should be able to get right to what they want to collaborate on without having to invent or draw basic things first. They should be able to pull from a catalog, just like the other industries have made possible.
And was the catalog an industry reference group developed, or have you started with some commonalities that were say, specific to North America and Canada, or is it really truly global?
No, we started really with our group of QWeb members, because that's who we are. But we stayed universal. In other words, if I was building a mass timber selector or a mass timber floor builder, I wasn't just building a Nordic Structures catalog, because they are a great standard bearer. They're a great trailblazer. But as other manufacturers come online, we want to have a universal product that will sort and teach architects about the actual criteria and filters that will make what it does really is it makes the actual educational work of training architects how to use a new system more live. So this is published and started with our regional group. And then we're already moving into, knock on wood, we should be able to actually say out loud soon, we should be integrating BC and Western Canada soon. And we're also working on some US alliances that can help that go globally. So we definitely built this to share, but we had to start regionally and get the full spread really correct. And I guess the other thing I learned in regards to that, Paul, is that when you're building software, you have to test the edges of what things can do. So what we ended up doing, we're good at testing the edges for sure, but what we ended up doing is describing the major structural systems in ways that the Revit users and the architect need to see them, not in the ways we think about them. So we actually have four major streams, mass timber only being one. And we start with a loadable components that are post and beam or glue lam or even solid timber. The mass timber slabs was really a new creation because the core materials didn't exist well within Autodesk ecosystem, and we're still having to add new fields of data to describe this longitudinal material that has strength in a weak axis, and there's still work to do there. That's a whole stream of its own. The third stream was really the multiple enclosure systems that can come forward from the timber industry, and that can range from timber curtain walls to lightwood frame to open web joists. So there's a whole host. That's a really big body of work there. And then the fourth one that we started and are still keeping in a closed beta until we're really ready to launch is a modular or a volumetric stream, in which we describe the process of designing using modular constraints and then adding in the multiple biosource material impacts you can have within that metric.
And the main thing with BIM that I understand is that you're really looking at product geometry, and you're looking at the specification of the material that sits within that sort of geometry. And, you know, with Revit, you can actually export your model to Tekla or Drupal and do your engineering, bring that model back. There's interoperability between those programs now. So, you know, I'm not surprised that if it's a BIM-oriented tool, it's only going to have that product geometry in it, and whether it has transverse and longitudinal lamellas and you know, different specifications within those layers of the CLT, you know, I think it matters little if it's sitting in the architectural space, but then you can export it into another program. And it sounds really interesting that you've got this progression. And what do you think is going to be the big step for you next to take it outside of Canada and say North America to say Europe for adoption? Does there need to be focus groups on the types of product specifications that are in that region that may differ to North America and Canada, for example?
Yeah, that could be. And by the way, our dog barking doesn't mean we're being attacked here or anything. It's just people getting home. So no, I think you're absolutely right. The way that the transition, well, first of all, what the App Store downloads have showed us is that there's already a huge, huge global interest. And that's really validating. It is it's a global it's a global movement already. And so I think one of the things that we're most active in right now is carbon itself is a subset. How people calculate carbon is a really data-rich sub question, and it brings out the actual information in BIM. Building information modeling should actually include a lot more data than it actually does. Most firms, especially in the US, are really using it to produce drawings. While it's possible to go to fabrication, the level of precision needs to be way higher than most people are used to. So we're actually working simultaneously in a couple of those spaces you mentioned. We are releasing accurate content, meaning it's drawn in accurate metric format at the exact size as manufacturers are going to do it. So when it circles back to the manufacturers, it's much more reliable to them to begin their downstream processing. The other thing that we're finding is architects have a tremendous need for more detailing. And we are actually doing a lot of the 2D and the specs that go in behind that, because it makes sense for the manufacturers to offer and share that in a bundle right with that core family. So that is also a surprisingly big gap that we're helping to fill, and it's creating a lot of good engagement with the marketplace. But I think to really translate to Europe well, the space we're working at right now is that there's been a lot of interoperability BIM software work done for years. And those of us who have been around CAD/CAM software really know the IFC format, it works. It's a little clunky, but it works for what it was needed. It needed more modernization and more agile paths to work with it, but it's a pretty stable and multiple platform format. And recently, so we're part of what we feel like is a recent surge in modernization and relook at the IFC format. And we're really excited by that. And because we're open source, we're able to tap into other communities. I would give a shout out to a European AEC platform called Speckle, which is a free and open source two-way data platform. We're using a Speckle and IFC beta right now, or it's actually like an alpha, in which manufacturers are able to publish carefully drawn archetype structural components and onto our Speckle server. This is all still done locally as a microservice. And the user who's doing a carbon calculation for a proposed type of building can say, I want to do an office building in so-and-so size range, and I want to see how much savings I could get in my GHG footprint. And I want to use my local data. So it'd be very transferable to Europe to have somebody actually log on and say, I want to try this building type. And the Speckle server, so far, it looks like we're going to be able to aggregate the IFC files and pull volume data right down from that and share a preliminary carbon benefit statement. And then at that moment, when the proof of concept is shown and the client can see a report and the architect can sell the wood option, in our mind, that's the right moment to actually launch a content pack and give it to the BIM users and get that going. It's actually before the BIM model is started.
So there's a couple of things in there to unpack. The first one is you see the technology as being almost a method of modeling the viability of a building to compare one typology, say a traditional building to a mass timber building, and account for your sustainability metrics. The other thing I'm hearing is that because it's in the BIM sphere, you can import data, and I would presume most large manufacturers in the world have got EPDs, environmental product declarations, for those who don't know what EPD is. And you draw information from that. The EPD is really important because it takes into consideration the operational carbon aspects of producing a product, where the resources come from, where the glue comes from, you know, how many people work in the plant, what's the energy inputs, energy outputs, etc. And bringing that into BIM and then accounting for the carbon and then actually packaging up that information to then hand to the team that might sit beyond the developer or the principal of the building. Now we're moving into the architectural specificity and we're looking at how do we design it, and it will go from 30% detailed design up to 80% and start construction. It's really interesting because you've described a software that has this adaptability to move from development stage through to construction phase. You've got IFCs coming through, which are really great for other integration platforms. I know that, you know, CADWorks and, you know, even CADmaker probably use it. You know, I know Hundegger and Cambium use it. You know, you're exporting all this stuff from the system. It really is quite a universal, and you said also it's open source, which is incredible. So on that note, how do people access it? Give it a plug. Tell us exactly, you know, where we can go to get it.
Yeah, well, we knew not everybody was loading it out of the Autodesk App Store. So we have created a nonprofit informational website, www.offsitewood.org, and all of the same content, which is in our plugin, is also there, plus much more. We can share a lot more of our template files, our textures, our details, and our mission. Our privacy statement, I want to mention, we're one of the only tools that's built from the ground up using EU GDPR privacy standards. So we're really not here to learn about who's who. We are here to learn about where market interest is happening, because there's a really long on-ramp to getting certified for new markets. So it's really helpful for us to be able to tell manufacturers, everybody wants wood fiber insulation. Can we please go down the seven-figure path and our three-year certification process for that? And that's what this tool is doing in terms of aggregating data. But beyond that, free and open source for everybody. And I'm available directly as the leader of this project to take on certain new beta testers. We also have a micro contract model for content creation. So as really good studios come up with ideas of their own in markets where we see activity, we like to engage with them directly so they can publish onto the platform. And I think the last thing we're really working on is regional validation takes time and good local partners. So when people go to that website and shoot us a line, I will personally see if you're in a market where we can help a little more. I'd love to.
Excellent. And Eli, what's the best way to get in contact with you?
Right through the website's probably best. And we have a small team. We're still a nonprofit running basically a startup here, but we will definitely answer your inquiries within 24 hours. And thanks so much for having me on your show.
Well, you're probably a little bit better than me. The IAMTC is answering within 48 hours. So you're at least...
Oh, shoot. That's what I should have said.
You're at least 24 hours better than us, my friend. But no, in all seriousness, I think you're probably one of the most active and responsive people on the LinkedIn social media platform, and certainly your involvement and coming from a position of experience, right? You're not just sitting there saying, how does this plugin work? You've got a background in architecture. You've been working with actual mass timber buildings up in Boston with a young, vibrant IT-focused team. You know, you're in field doing this. So if anyone wants to reach out and try this plugin, you know, I do recommend that you get in contact with Eli about this if you want to develop anything, but simply try it, see how it works. Feedback into the community. I think that's the way that the best open source tools work, is to build this community. And certainly we'll be putting some contact information in the show notes for this particular podcast. But Eli, thank you so much for your time. I know it's only been a short one, but it's been a bloody brilliant one, and that's the most important thing. And thank you for being on the show.
Yeah, this is great. Have me back for chapter two soon, Paul. Keep up the great work yourself.
Thank you, my friend. Cheers.
See you. Take care.